Happy 2024 to you all. In this new year, I hope to bring more episodes where we summarize specific articles related to OMT. Today's episode goes over the topic of fascial innervation. Hope you enjoy. Welcome to episode 99 of the Osteopathic Manipulative Medicine Podcast, where we share clinical stories and pearls related to osteopathic medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ben Green, a third-year ONMM resident at Michigan State University. Today, I thought we would talk about fascia, and I'd love to go over a research article. It's a systematic review. It is titled Fascial Innervation, a Systematic Review of the Literature, published in the International Journal of Molecular Sciences. This systematic review was done by a number of prominent fascial researchers, particularly Carla Stecco, who is one of the leading researchers in fascia, and she does her work out of Padua, Italy. This article was published in May of 2022, and let's run through it. So what is the importance of a review article? So it gives us a comprehensive knowledge on a specific topic, in this case, fascial innervation. It helps us understand the current state of research on this specific topic, but it's not necessarily analyzing if the individual studies were done well, were done up to good scientific standards. And it also gives us an idea of what has not been researched. Now, when you're going over a systematic review article, there's a checklist that you should go through to analyze the scientific rigor of the research article. And this is the PRISMA checklist. This was a checklist, I believe it came out in 2020, and PRISMA is just PRISMA. So if you look that up, this checklist should pop up. And as you're reading through the systematic review literature, you should go through one by one and answer these questions. Identify the report as a systematic review. Describe the rationale for the review in the context of the existing knowledge. And it just goes down question by question, and it will help you kind of pick apart, is this systematic review done well or not? And what is it lacking in? So it's really helpful if you're going to present at Journal Club. It's a very helpful outline. As I was going through some fascial articles, this quote from Still came up from Research and Practice published in 1910. And I thought, my goodness, Still was truly ahead of his time. So I wanted to read this quote. It's a little bit long, but I think it's very insightful. And it goes like this. The fascia gives one of, if not the greatest problems to solve as to the part it takes in life and death. It belts each muscle, vein, nerve, and all organs of the body. It is almost a network of nerves, cells, and tubes running to and from it. It is crossed and filled with, no doubt, millions of nerve centers and fibers to carry on the work of secreting and excreting fluid, vital and destructive. By its action, we live, and by its failure, we shrink or swell and die. Each muscle plays its part in active life. Each fiber of all muscles owes its pliability to that yielding septum washer that gives all muscles help to glide over and around all adjacent muscles and ligaments without friction or jar. It not only lubricates the fibers, but gives nourishment to all parts of the body. Its nerves are so abundant that no atom of flesh fails to get nerve and fluid supply therefrom. So still had this idea, one, of the importance, the utmost importance of fascia in the body, but also that fascia is innervated. How he knew that practically, I'm not sure. But it sounds like this was a very strong intuition that he had. So I think it's just insightful to the knowledge and how far Dr. Still was ahead of the times, ahead of the scientific knowledge at that time. So the objective of the paper was to collect and systematically present and analyze the existing evidence on muscular deep fascial innervation from both a histological and immunohistochemical point of view. And they looked at literature from the year 2000 all the way through 2021. And in their introduction, they talked about how myofascial pain is often dismissed. And the reason that they posited this idea was because there seems to be an unclear mechanism of action of myofascial pain. Although we have concepts such as plantar fasciitis, myofascial pain syndrome, and myofascial trigger points. So they wanted to dive into the idea of fascia being innervated. Is it actually innervated? So they did a literature search in PubMed and Google Scholar from 2000 through 2021. They looked in the English and the Spanish language only. Their inclusion criteria were animal and human studies, and studies including any nerve receptor in the fascia. They only looked at original papers. Their exclusion criteria, they excluded clinical studies. They excluded studies that looked at ligaments, tendons, and visceral fascia. So at the end of their Google search, and taking into consideration their inclusion and exclusion criteria, they looked originally at 5,210 articles and then selected 23 of these articles, 23 of the 5,210 based off of the inclusion and exclusion criteria. These 23 studies included 5 studies with rats, 4 studies with mice, 2 with horses, 2 with both humans and rats, and 10 with just humans. Now, of these 10 studies with just humans, 2 of the studies were done on live humans. And I don't know the details of the studies because I didn't read the original studies. I've only read the systematic review. So I'm not sure practically how these studies were carried out. So two of these 10 studies done on humans were done on live humans. 6 of these studies done on humans were on cadaveric specimens. And then the final 2 studies were done with both live and cadaveric specimens. There's some of the immunohistochemical markers that you can find in the table of the research article. I'll just mention a few. They used SP to look at nociceptors, S100 immunohistochemical marker to look for Schwann cells in the fascia, the PGP9.5 for neuronal cells, MBP for myelinating glia. So they had all these immunohistochemical markers looking for different types of nerves, nerve endings. And if you're interested, you can always go to the study and look at the study. So in the systematic review, they organized the paper according to the type of nerve tissue that was found and where it was found in the body. So they started out looking, well, they started out with the head. What has the research shown about fascia in the head? And what they found was the masseter fascia. And they compared innervation density between the muscle of the masseter and the fascia of the masseter. And they found that there was more innervation of the masseter fascia compared to the actual skeletal muscle of the masseter. Interesting. And again, I don't know the nitty-gritty details of that study because I didn't read it. I'm just reading the systematic review. 57.6% of the nerve fibers that they found in both the fascia and the skeletal muscle of the masseter were nociceptive fibers, so pain fibers. Then they looked at the trunk and summarized the studies that looked at the thoracolumbar fascia, which is the most studied fascia in the human body. And what they found were, what these studies found were that the majority of nerve fibers that were found in the thoracolumbar fascia were found at the muscle-fascial interface, or the myofascial junction. And there were at the myofascial junction, they found Golgi tendon organs and muscle spindles. So these receptors that primarily are sensing stretch or tensile force. They did not find any Pacini, Ruffini, or Pacini or Ruffini corpuscles in the thoracolumbar fascia, which I thought was kind of interesting. So no mechanoreceptor sensing pressure or sensing stretch. They did find, though, a neural plexus. And in this neural plexus, the researchers have found sensory and autonomic free nerve endings, which is interesting that we have autonomic nerve endings in our thoracolumbar fascia. So it seems to play, or it seems to be a responsive tissue in the sympathetic or parasympathetic nerve response. The sacral thoracolumbar fascia has more free nerve endings than the thoracic thoracolumbar fascia. So we know that the thoracolumbar fascia does cross down over the sacrum. And in that specific area, there are more free nerve endings. And the free nerve endings, they said, were primarily nociceptive free nerve endings. The thoracolumbar fascia has three times more nerve endings than the latissimus dorsi muscle. Interesting. More free nerve endings in the fascia, in the TLF, compared to the lats. They also saw in the research, in these 23 studies that they went over, inflamed thoracolumbar fascia, where you saw an increase in inflammatory markers like IL-6, TNF-alpha. The nociceptors had an increased density and length. So the nerves were more robust and were longer. And they saw this in both rats and human studies. So that's all quite fascinating information. In the upper extremity, they looked at the palmar aponeurosis, and they saw a high number of Golgi tendons and Pacini corpuscles. And that makes sense, right? Our hands, we want to have more mechanoreceptors. And so they found the Golgi and the Pacini corpuscles. They also saw that with Dupuytren's contractures, there were a much higher number of free nerve endings. And again, those free nerve endings, they were saying, are primarily nociceptive receptors. So in the article, they had some images of the nerve plexus that they found in a mouse that was the nerve plexus found in the thoracolumbar fascia, and that was stained with the S100. S100 was looking at Schwann cells, so it's a pretty interesting image. Okay, in the lower extremity, they looked at the superficial fascia of the hip, and they believe that it's the second most densely innervated tissue after the skin. So superficial fascia of the hip is the second most innervated tissue of the body after the skin. The plantar fascia, they found, has free nerve endings that are polymodal, meaning these free nerve endings are both proprioceptive, so helping us understand where our body is in space, which would be very important if you're walking, to be able to understand where your limb is as you're taking a step, walking up or down a step, or running over an uneven surface. And nociceptive. So also, the plantar fascia has nociceptive receptors sensing pain. They also have Pacini and Ruffini corpuscles, so pressure and stretch. And the highest concentration of these free nerve endings were found at the metatarsophalangeal joint. So that's where the highest concentration of these free nerve endings were found. The periosteum of the femur, they found mechanosensitive nociceptors that ran parallel with the bone. And they were saying that these, they believe, sense stress along the bone. So anytime the bone is flexed in some way, those mechanosensitive nociceptors would send a signal to your central nervous system. And they saw that there were myelinated spinal afferent nerves in the femoral periosteum. Tibial periosteum, they found proprioceptors. So just to summarize what they have found, the nociceptive or the nerve endings that they have found, and it was unclear to me reading the systematic review if these were found in humans, rats, cadavers, live humans, or horses. They didn't do a really good job at distinguishing that. So I am just going to say in specific areas of the body where they found these free nerve endings, but I can't tell you if it's specifically in humans, which we are most, or I should say I am most interested in. So in the masseter fascia, they found free nerve endings. In the brachial and antibrachial fascia, more free nerve endings. In the palmar fascia, they found free nerve endings. They found Pacini corpuscles, Ruffini corpuscles. In the knee retinacula, free nerve endings. In the ankle retinacula, free nerve endings, Pacini corpuscles, Ruffini corpuscles. In the trapezius fascia, free nerve endings. The thoracolumbar fascia, free nerve endings. Gluteal fascial, free nerve endings and muscle spindles. And the plantar fascia, free nerve endings, Pacini corpuscles, Ruffini corpuscles. And again, as I mentioned before, the free nerve endings, they said, were primarily nociceptive receptors, although they weren't all nociceptive receptors. And I can't say any more than that. That's all that they said in this article, in the systematic review. Okay, so summary of the discussion section. So from all of the data that they collected from these 23 research articles, they believe that it's likely that the TLF, or the thoracolumbar fascia, plays an important role in the generation and perception of low back pain. Why? Because of all of the free nerve endings, the nociceptive receptors that are there. It's very probable that the fascia is a sensory organ, and that myofascial pain is both a fascial alteration and a muscular problem. Langevin et al. Hypothesize that reiterated postures, sagittal plane imbalance, repetitive motions. For example, in sports, someone who is a golfer, they're doing their golf swing hundreds of thousands of times a year. And that potentially leads to altered movement patterns, which may lead to increased thickness of the tissue because they're using the same muscles, they're moving the same fascial, they're moving the same fascia in the same direction repeatedly. And that increased thickness could limit the sliding of the fascial layers because of the thickness and the density, which could potentially augment inflammation and increase pain. There's also a theory of the corpuscle. So the corpuscle is found in the superior limb fascia, in the flexor retinaculum of the wrist, the palmar and plantar aponeurosis. They believe, from these articles, that there is a static and dynamic proprioceptive and motor coordination role of the fascia, particular in these areas of the hand or the foot where we need more dexterity, we need more proprioception just because of the things that we do day to day with our hands, with our feet. There's other theories that fascial adhesions from trauma, overuse, or surgery modify hyaluronan, changing the activation of nerve receptors in the fascia. So fascia may become hyperactivated, sensitized, and generate pain. So fascia being in our periphery could lead to peripheral sensitization, which then sends a signal from these nerve endings in our fascia to the central nervous system, leading to central sensitization, and central sensitization leading to chronic pain. So fascia may be an explanation for both acute and chronic pain. They saw that there's an increased nociceptive density and length in pathological fascia, particularly of the palmar aponeurosis into Putrin's disease and in knee retinacula. So the fascia, those fascia that is pathological, as into Putrin's contracture, you have more nociceptive receptors in that fascia compared to patients that don't have Dupuytren's contracture, and the length of those nociceptive receptors is longer compared to patients that do not have a Dupuytren's contracture. There's another theory about the thoracolumbar fascia that they have seen that the TLF has a longer potentiation with electrical stimulation, that the electrical signal in the nerve endings in fascia remains there longer than in the nerve endings of skeletal muscle. So they think that maybe fascia, particularly the thoracolumbar fascia, could be an amplifier of pain because the signal is there, the electrical signal in the actual axon remains there longer than in skeletal muscle. So could it be an amplifier of pain? Potentially. So some limitations of the systematic review. It's unclear, as I mentioned before, the source of the fascial tissue. They didn't really distinguish if what they were saying was coming from an animal or a human, a live human or a cadaveric specimen. a rat or a horse. It wasn't clear. They were just saying, well, these are some of the nerve endings that we have found in these specific areas of the of a body, but I didn't know from what species. The N for tissue samples was unclear. So did they just look at the masseter of one cadaveric specimen, or did they look at 1,000 masseters of human cadaveric specimens? That was unclear. The human samples were mostly taken from old subjects between the age of 60 and 96 years old. 4 of the studies that were collected were taken from young adult subjects from the ages of 15 to 50. They did not compare the various types of markers and receptors in the same fascia. And in each study that they reviewed, innervation was characterized differently. So they couldn't make a comparison between the published data of the 23 studies that they were looking at, because they just characterized nerves differently. Future research. Mechanisms for nerve fiber length. Oh, excuse me. We need to try to figure out what is the mechanism for nerve fibers length increasing in inflamed fascia, particularly the thoracolumbar fascia. Like, why is that occurring and how does that occur? And is that actually increasing or amplifying pain? Future research that needs to be done: how do free nerve endings in the unstudied fascia respond to pathology? And then establish some protocols for which immunochemical markers to use and how to characterize the innervation. So have very clear protocols, which immunohistochemical markers we're going to use, what species are we going to look at, and how are we going to characterize the density, the length, and the thickness of the nerves. And in the systematic review, they did not look at clinical trials, but it would be interesting to see, does OMT influence the nociceptive innervation as far as the density, the length, and the thickness? So that is our discussion. Thanks for tuning in. Hopefully it was somewhat informative. If you have any questions, comments, or would like to be on the podcast, please email the onmmpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Be well, be curious, and spread osteopathy.